It was a humid December night in 2010 in Houston, Texas, when distant screams echoed through the night. It was around midnight as a group of bouncers patrolled the entrance of the popular nightclub, Blur Bar. "He's trying to kill me," a man screamed as he ran out of the darkness from a nearby street. He ran up the front steps, past the bouncers, and tried to get into the busy club. Frantic and out of breath, Aaron Shearhorn lifted his bloody shirt, revealing stab wounds across his chest. Another man appeared at the bottom of the steps with a knife in hand. He began aggressively swinging the knife towards Aaron. The bouncers jumped away from the blade. Unable to get inside the club, Aaron ran away into a dimly lit parking lot. He didn't get far. The man grabbed his jacket and repeatedly stabbed him. Bar patrons watched in horror from a second-story patio. Some would later tell police the attack seemed to be personal and that the man had every intention of murder. The man finally let go of Aaron, who fell to the ground, gasping for air. He then slowly walked away, back into the shadows of a nearby neighborhood. It would be nearly 10 years before he was caught, after investigators focused all their attention on the wrong guy. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 133. After I'm done working for the day, and after I've played with my daughter and put her off to sleep, I often just want to give my brain a break. It's the end of the night, and I finally have a few free minutes by myself. So what do? I sneak in a few levels of Best Fiends. Best Fiends is this infamously impossible-to-put-down puzzle game that you can play right on your phone. My favorite thing about it is how visual it is and how adorable all the little characters are. I have played well over 100 levels by now, and Christy from Canadian True Crime and I even have a friendly little competition going. Best Fiends has over 100 million downloads. It's free to download and has literally millions of 5-star reviews on the Apple App Store and Google Play. More levels, events, and challenges get added all the time. Seriously, once you download Best Fiends, boredom does not stand a chance. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Nowadays, I think many of us would rather color our hair in the comfort of our own home. But if you're like me, you're likely wondering how you would find the right color and how much does it cost? Well, Madison Reed makes coloring your hair at home affordable, and they give you the tools you need to choose your perfect color. Madison Reed takes coloring your hair at home to the next level and gives you beautiful, professional hair color delivered right to your door, starting at just $22. There used to be only two options for coloring your hair. You could either try outdated at-home color or spend time and money at a salon. Not anymore. Madison Reed's color is unique. It's crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 gorgeous multidimensional shades. And finding the perfect shade is easy. You just go to their website, madison-reed.com, and take their quick online quiz that will ask you questions about your hair, like what you want your end result to be, what your hair texture is, etc. They then match you with your perfect shade. So do your hair coloring at home and look as if you just came from the salon. And now, Court Junkies can get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit with the code COURT. Go to madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. That's madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. Brittany Watkins was standing near the edge of the upstairs patio at Blur Bar with her boyfriend and best friend when she first heard the screams. She watched as Aaron ran from the man she later told police was at least 6 feet tall with a wiry build and long arms. She watched as the man used his reach to grab Aaron, pull him close, and stab him. Horrified that no one was helping, Watkins ran inside the crowded bar and grabbed towels from a bartender. Once outside, she found Aaron alone, lying on the rugged ground as blood stained the concrete. Both Watkins and her boyfriend used those towels to slow the bleeding, fighting to help the man whose name they didn't even know. Watkins ran her hands through Aaron's brown hair in hopes of calming him before an ambulance arrived. Seconds felt like minutes as they waited. Before the flashing lights appeared, Watkins watched as Aaron's eyes dilated, his breathing slowed. He died just after midnight. Witnesses told police the stabbing seemed cold and calculated. One man said he watched from the parking lot and made eye contact with the attacker as he slowly walked away. The attacker was described as a black man, between 6 feet and 6 feet 7 inches, between 200 and 270 pounds, with short hair and a body described somewhere between wiry and athletic. Detectives with the Houston Police Department searched surveillance cameras from neighboring bars, investigated a receipt found in Aaron's pocket, and questioned why Aaron's wallet was found in a front yard near the nightclub. Nothing provided any meaningful results. They were left with a broad description and little else. The following night after the murder, Lydell Grant struggled to park his car in the Blur Bar parking lot. He couldn't have known that someone standing outside the club was watching and thought he looked familiar. Was he the killer from the night before? That witness sent an anonymous tip to police, a vehicle identification number that came back to Lydell's white Pontiac. It gave police their first real lead. Not only did they have a name, but Lydell fit the killer's description. A black man, 6 feet 2 inches tall, 225 pounds, and black hair. Lydell also had a linebacker's build, matching the killer's description as an athletic build. Police learned Lydell had a lengthy criminal history, including a recent release from prison for using stolen credit cards. The case was assigned to Sergeant Eli Cisneros, a 20-year veteran with the Houston Police Department. Sergeant Cisneros had also spent the past 5 years as a homicide investigator. He pulled an old mugshot of Lydell and put it in a 6-person photo lineup. He planned to take that photo spread to 6 of the witnesses who had witnessed the murder. It's an old technique used by detectives relying on witness identification to either confirm or dismiss any suspicions on a suspect. The practice has since come under more scrutiny in recent years as more people are exonerated because of mistaken eyewitness identification. 2 days after the murder, Sergeant Cisneros and his partner, William Ferguson, showed the lineup to 7 witnesses. "This is the guy I saw stab a guy." And, "The guy I circled was the guy I seen stab another guy at Blur where I work." 2 of the bouncers wrote after picking Lydell's photo. Brittany Watkins wrote, "This is the guy I saw stab the white male at Club Blur." Watkins would later say the attacker's face was burned into her memory, and he, quote, "looked very determined, which is the reason I have no problem recognizing his face." In all, 6 of the 7 eyewitnesses picked Lydell's photo. Armed with the anonymous tip and word of the witnesses, the detectives went to the Harris County District Attorney's Office for an arrest warrant. Lydell Grant has never disputed he was in the area the night of the murder. Blur Bar sits snuggled in the community of Houston's Montrose neighborhood, surrounded by homes and a strip of bars and nightclubs. Lydell, then 33, said he would visit the area to relax and spend time away from people he knew. The night of the murder, he met a man outside of one of those bars, less than half a mile away from where Aaron was killed. Raul Rodriguez had driven in from Austin for a weekend getaway. The two passed each other in the parking lot outside a bar. Lydell stopped him and struck up a conversation. Rodriguez, who was 52 and had recently beaten cancer, felt a connection to the tall, handsome man standing before him. They agreed to go to a bar and have a few drinks. Around 1 a.m. the next morning, an hour after Aaron died, they left to go to an after-hours club near downtown Houston. At no point, Rodriguez later testified at Lydell's trial, was Lydell ever acting suspiciously or in a manner that suggested he had just killed a person. He never noticed any blood on Lydell's white shoes or jeans. Lydell wasn't nervous or acting suspiciously, and there was never a time when the two weren't together until they parted ways the next morning. That made it all the more confusing for Lydell as he sat in an interrogation room at the Houston Police Department 5 days after the murder. The detectives questioned him about the crime, which he swore he knew nothing about. But Sergeant Cisneros had a theory that pinned Lydell to the crime. Aaron had owed Lydell money for drugs, and when he didn't pay, Lydell killed him. This theory came despite the fact that there was no DNA nor any physical evidence found at the crime scene that linked Lydell to the crime. Detectives had their theory for their motive, and with the word of six eyewitnesses pinning Lydell as the murderer, he was arrested and booked in the Harris County Jail. At Lydell Grant's trial 2 years later, in December 2012, prosecutors built their case largely around the word of those six witnesses. One of the bouncers, who later quit because of the murder, told the jury he made sure to focus on the killer during the attack. He pointed to Lydell in the courtroom and said he was certain Lydell was the killer. Another of the bar's employees said Lydell had, quote, every intention of doing what he was doing. Brittany Watkins, who had rushed to Aaron's side immediately after he was attacked, told jurors Lydell was, quote, definitely the person I saw stabbing the victim that night. She went on to say, and I see him in here, and he is exactly what he looked like to me that night. Although detectives tried to establish a motive during their investigation, prosecutors rejected Sergeant Cisneros' theory that Lydell killed Aaron because of money. Instead, the state's attorneys openly admitted to the jury that they didn't have a motive as to why Lydell did it. Interestingly, detectives never found the knife used in the attack, and DNA testing from scrapings under one of Aaron's fingernails revealed there were two different sets of DNA. The Houston Police Department Crime Lab was unable to separate the DNA mixture to determine whose DNA the second set belonged. It's something prosecutor Gretchen Flater latched onto during the trial. Prosecutor Flater asked an analyst from the crime lab if it could be Lydell's DNA. No conclusions can be made regarding Lydell as a possible contributor, the analyst said. So in that circumstance, you could not exclude him from being a potential contributor to that DNA? Prosecutor Flater asked. Correct, the analyst said. Lydell's court-appointed attorney, Craig Still, from the local public defender's office, fought with little success to discredit the state witness's testimony. When he pressed a witness on how they were so sure Lydell was the killer, one told the jury, quote, if I didn't see anybody that looked like the person who committed the crime, I wouldn't have circled the photo. But Still had his own play, a man who gave Lydell a rock-solid alibi that would prove he wasn't the killer. After the state rested their case, Still called Raul Rodriguez to testify. And Rodriguez told the jury all about their night together, how they met sometime after 11 o'clock outside a bar, how they bar hopped for a couple hours, drinking and talking and getting to know one another, how they left the area and spent time at an overnight club in downtown Houston. There was never a time the two weren't around each other, Rodriguez testified, indicating there was no time for Lydell to sneak off and kill someone. But as convincing as Rodriguez's testimony may have been, It unraveled during the state's cross-examination. Rodriguez struggled to remember specific details of the night. He couldn't recall exactly what time he arrived in Houston, how long it took to drive to the bar from his hotel, and how many bars he and Lydell visited before leaving for the downtown club. Unlike the state's witnesses who were so confident in their testimony, prosecutor Gretchen Flater was able to cast doubt on Rodriguez's memory of the night. "You would agree with me that it's difficult for you to estimate the time since it was 2 years ago?" prosecutor Flater asked him. "Yes," Rodriguez said. In his closing argument, prosecutor Aaron Burdett told the jury, quote, "If he's not guilty of murdering Aaron Shearhorn, then why does all the evidence say he is?" After a 3-day trial and just 45 minutes of deliberations by the jury, Lydell Grant was found guilty. He was sentenced to life in prison. Lydell was devastated. We recently spoke with Lydell about this moment. What's it like knowing you're innocent and then being sentenced to life in prison?
I just want to say that, you know, knowing that you was innocent, knowing that I was innocent and I was actually incarcerated for a crime that I didn't commit, I mean, it was devastating. It was pretty much hurtful. It scarred me. It really did. Just knowing that the actual perpetrator was out there.
And so Lydell Grant was whisked away to prison. Do you really know what's in your multivitamin? Sugars, GMOs, synthetic fillers, artificial colorants, not to mention animal byproducts. All are ingredients you might find in a multivitamin. But Ritual isn't your typical multivitamin. Their clean, vegan-friendly formula is made with key nutrients and forms your body can actually use. None of those shady and frankly disgusting extras. One of my favorite things about Ritual is that their delayed-release capsules are designed to dissolve later in less sensitive areas of the stomach. So if you take one on an empty stomach, you don't have to worry about feeling nauseous or icky. Ritual can deliver right to your door every month with free shipping always. You can start, snooze, or cancel your subscription at any time. And if you don't love Ritual within your first month, they'll refund your first order. Now available for women, men, and teens, Ritual multivitamins, including their best-selling prenatals, are scientifically developed to help support different life stages. You deserve to know what's in your multivitamin. That's why Ritual is offering Court Junkies 10% off during your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/court today to get started. It's not easy to prioritize yourself when there's a lot on your plate, but investing in your mental health has long-term benefits. And with Talkspace, it can actually be affordable. The Talkspace Network is composed of thousands of licensed therapists who have experience in over 40 specialties, including but not limited to treating depression, anxiety, substance abuse, trauma, relationship issues, and much more. Unlike in-person therapy sessions, Talkspace gives you 24/7 access to your online therapy room. Send unlimited messages to your dedicated therapist, and they'll respond daily, 5 days a week. Best of all, an entire month on Talkspace costs about the same amount as a single in-person session. And now, Talkspace covers 40 million people for online therapy through their insurance or employer. The bottom line is that we all need someone to talk to. Talkspace wants to give us the support we deserve at a price we can afford. As a Court Junkie, you get $100 off your first month on Talkspace. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure to use the code COURT to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Court and Talkspace.com. Lydell Grant spent the majority of his sentence in the Michaels unit, an all-male prison lost in the East Texas Pines. He said he spent his early days wondering why all this was happening to him, wondering if the truth was ever truly going to come out, wondering if a new attorney would take his case to set him free. Lydell didn't have any knowledge about the law when he first got to prison, but he noticed other prisoners working on their cases, trying to prove their innocence. he started going to the prison's law library every weekday morning. He dissected his case, looking for anything that could help set him free. He started looking at the DNA. If Aaron's DNA could be identified, why couldn't the other unknown set? He began writing letters to innocence organizations across the United States in a plea to take on his case. He heard about a man named Michael Ware with the Innocence Project of Texas, a seemingly mythical man who's helped free more than 30 innocent people in his career. Lydell wrote a letter to the Innocence Project of Texas. He wrote, quote, "Here I am, an innocent man who has been wrongfully accused and wrongfully convicted and sentenced to life in prison for a murder that I did not commit. I know I am innocent. This is a story that needs to be heard. I may have been convicted and sentenced to life in prison for a crime I did not commit, but the truth is out there, and I wait for the day for it to be discovered." Days turned to months, and months turned to years. The Innocence Project of Texas receives thousands of letters a year from people claiming their innocence. It's a tedious process of sorting through those that have strong innocence claims and evidence like DNA that can prove it, and others who are looking for a get-out-of-jail-free card. In early 2019, Michael Ware and the Innocence Project of Texas began seriously looking at Lydell's case. Ware has spent 30-plus years as an attorney fighting for the innocent. As executive director for the Innocence Project of Texas, he loves what he does. And when it comes to criminal defense, he says, "I don't care who your client is. The client is always the underdog." Here's Michael Ware.
What was troubling to me when I first started looking at the case is the fact that the testimony about the DNA was so obviously in error and really a lie, and that it just slid by the jury uncontested, and it was very damaging, and it was inaccurate and it wasn't true, and I believe that the prosecutor shouldn't have tried to get away with it, but the prosecutor not only tried to get away with it, the prosecutor did get away with it. I thought the defense lawyer should never have allowed them to get away with it. But they did. And it just makes you wonder, you know, for every, Lydell Grant who, we were lucky enough to have DNA in his case, there's got to be 1,000 innocent individuals out there convicted in the same way, in the same manner. They just are not fortunate enough to have DNA in their case.
At the time of Lydell's trial, the Houston Crime Lab couldn't make a determination on that second set of DNA found under Aaron's fingernails. But 9 years later, Ware questioned, could it be identified with vastly improved technology? Ware got the original test results from the Harris County District Attorney's Office. He sent them to a company in Pennsylvania called CyberGenetics. The company uses a computer software known as True Allele. The software uses an algorithm to separate DNA mixtures and then compares it to another person's DNA. It then produces a statistical probability of a match between the DNA samples. The software has helped free at least 12 people throughout the United States, as well as helped solve dozens of unsolved cases. In Lydell's case, True Allele was able to separate the DNA mixture found under Aaron's fingernails. When it compared the mixtures to Lydell's DNA, it showed with near certainty Lydell wasn't a contributor to the mixture. The very opposite of what was told at his trial, when the lab analyst told the jury that no conclusion could be made if Lydell was a contributor. That wasn't all. With CyberGenics' help, that unknown DNA mixture was uploaded into the FBI's combined DNA index system, which you may know as CODIS, a national database that holds profiles of thousands of convicted felons in the United States. To Ware's surprise, the unknown profile came back with a name, Germerico Carter. Despite the new evidence in his case, Lydell wasn't immediately freed from prison. Ware returned to the Harris County District Attorney's Office and was met with some skepticism. Gerald Doyle and Randy Capone lead the District Attorney's Conviction Integrity Unit for one of the largest DA's offices in the country. They questioned if there was a valid reason why Germerico's DNA was found under Aaron's fingernails. They also had never dealt with the True Allele software that excluded Lydell from the mixture. They started their own investigation. They reached out to the Texas Forensic Science Commission about the software. If a murder case against Germerico was going to go to trial, prosecutors may have to defend it in front of a jury. They also had Lydell's DNA tested at the state crime lab, which showed he wasn't a contributor to the mixture found under Aaron's fingernails. With the help of the Houston Police Department, Gerald and Randy shifted their focus to Germerico. He too matched the killer's description, a black man, 6'2" tall, weighing 226 pounds, and had a wiry build. He had a history of arrests in Harris County, dating back to 2005 for possession and burglary. But there was one particular arrest that gave them pause. Months before Aaron was killed, Germerico was arrested for attempting to swallow crack cocaine just blocks away from where Aaron died. Meanwhile, Sergeants Richard Rodriguez and Mike Burrow with the Houston Police Department were reviewing old police reports, witness statements, photo lineups, and crime scene photos. With the help of the FBI, Sergeant Rodriguez learned that Germerico was in the area the night of Aaron's murder. Shortly after the murder, Germerico moved to Atlanta. Sergeant Rodriguez learned that while living there, Germerico had been charged with stabbing a roommate just months later. Investigators also looked into Lydell's cell phone. They found text messages to Raul Rodriguez, his alibi witness. They didn't find any evidence that Lydell had any connection to Aaron. Certainly no proof that Aaron owed Lydell money for drugs. The deeper Sergeant Rodriguez dug into the case, the more he realized Lydell likely wasn't the man who murdered Aaron Shearhorn. With the case against Germerico growing, Harris County District Attorney Kim Ogg agreed to Lydell's release on bond. And so on November 26, 2019, 2 days before Thanksgiving, Lydell walked out of the Harris County Jail with his mom, family, and supporters by his side. Lydell wore a black polo shirt, unbuttoned and untucked over his black jeans that covered his linebacker's build. It was a stark difference from earlier that morning when he stood before a judge in an orange jumpsuit, his bald head shining under the courtroom lights, with his hands cuffed behind his back as the judge listed his bond conditions. A smile stretched across his clean-shaven face as he approached a scrum of reporters.
I feel free now. It was a long time coming. Yes. I always claim my innocence. I just thank God to the Innocent Project. They believed in me. They took my case and they worked it. I think the supporters, my family, y'all can see I got a beautiful family. It's wonderful.
He answered a barrage of questions. What were his plans for Thanksgiving? What does he have to say to the people who sent him to prison? What's next as investigators look into the decades-old murder case against him? It was a picture-perfect moment that he had imagined after all the years he spent in prison. And for the first time in years, he could put all that behind him as he stood in the warm, humid air.
The last 9 years, man, I feel like an animal in a cage, especially knowing that I didn't do it. Knowing that the actual killer was still roaming the streets, knowing that my family was suffering, it was hard. But with God, I gotta keep saying, with God, it was all good.
After Lydell's release, investigators were honing in on Jermerico Carter. They found him in Atlanta, where he had been regularly pawning items. And they discovered he had an active warrant out for his arrest for a probation violation. With the help of the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, Jermerico was arrested 3 weeks after Lydell's bond release. Sergeants Rodriguez and Burrow with the Houston Police Department flew to Atlanta to meet with him about Aaron's murder. Jermerico first denied having any idea about the murder, but Sergeant Burrow kept pushing. Investigators knew he was in Houston at the time, and they told him his DNA was found under Aaron's fingernails. Could he explain that? Jermerico confessed. He told them, according to court documents, that Aaron was walking near him that night and told him to get out of the way. Aaron then hit him twice on the head before spitting at him, he told the investigators. He said Aaron then started attacking him in the street, and it was Aaron who first pulled out a knife and was likely stabbed as he tried to fight him off. Jermerico said when he got control of the knife, Aaron ran towards Blur Bar. And once in the parking lot after Aaron tried to get in the club, Jermerico said he only punched Aaron a couple of times and never stabbed him. He told investigators he didn't know what happened to the knife and admitted to fleeing to Atlanta shortly after the murder. Jermerico Carter was charged with murdering Aaron Shearhorn on December 21st, 2019, nearly 9 years to the day that Aaron died. Jermerico is currently being held in the Harris County Jail on a $150,000 bond as he awaits trial. As it stands now, no trial date has been set. On the same day she announced that she was charging Jermerico Carter, Harris County District Attorney Kim Ogg announced she was dropping all charges against Lydell. She said she fully supports Lydell's exoneration. Days before Christmas, Lydell stood, sharply dressed on his mom's front porch, in a black suit, a white collared shirt, and black bow tie, surrounded by another scrum of reporters. He flashed his signature smile with two dimples piercing his high cheeks as he answered more questions.
First, me personally, it wasn't no waste of time because I had a plan while I was at the bottom. I was planning the plot on my comeback. I knew that this day was going to come. I just didn't know when. I hold no grudge towards the Harris County District Attorney's Office. I mean, it was something that happened, and I can't whimper and whine about it. I'm ready to move on and move forward with my life. My future is just so bright, it's blinding me. The light that I see and the vision that I see that God has given me is blinding me. I mean, nothing but prosperous comings are coming to me. And 2020 is a fresh beginning, and it's a new chapter in my life that I'm willing to start off in the right way.
But even though Lydell had been released, being exonerated, well, that was a different story. It's been 11 months since Lydell Grant's release from prison, but in the eyes of the criminal justice system, he's still a convicted murderer, despite the support from the police, from the district attorney, and from the judge that he's innocent. That's because in Texas, the Court of Criminal Appeals makes all final rulings on actual innocence claims. It's an important ruling for those who are wrongfully convicted. With an actual innocence ruling, their conviction is tossed out, their record can be expunged, and they're entitled to $80,000 per year they spent wrongfully imprisoned. In early January 2020, Harris County Judge George Powell agreed with the findings that Lydell is innocent and sent his case to the Court of Criminal Appeals. At the time, many involved with his case believed he'd be the fastest exoneree in Texas history. Instead, the appeals court is dragging a decision. It's made two requests since January, The nine judges have asked for Jermerico Carter's recorded confession he gave to the Houston Police Department. And then in July, they sent the case back to the trial court, asking that all six of the witnesses who testified against Lydell give sworn affidavits regarding his innocence. Mike Ware, Lydell's attorney, said he has never seen such a request from the appeals court in his 30-year career.
It never ceases to amaze me how much more difficult, you know, exponentially more difficult it is to exonerate a completely innocent man than it is to convict a completely innocent man. It's very easy to convict a completely innocent man. You can do it on a bunch of lies. And that's what happens again and again. But even these profound truths that we were able to uncover in Lydell's case, these irrefutable, profound truths, so far have not been enough to exonerate. And, you know, there's something really bad wrong with that picture. But so, you know, I had actually anticipated that this would be a pretty quick decision on the part of the Court of Criminal Appeals, and that we could all move on with our lives. And the DA's office could move on with prosecuting the actual perpetrator, and the victim's family could move on, and the witnesses could move on, and you know, and we could spend our time on other injustices that need to be corrected. But for whatever reason, the Court of Criminal Appeals has inexplicably prolonged this process. They have inexplicably ask for additional information that actually reveals their own naivety about the way the justice system really works, I think, and the way eyewitness identification works within that justice system, and it's at the expense of everybody involved. I mean, not just certainly at Lydell's expense, but like I said, at the expense of the DA's office, who is trying to prosecute the actual perpetrator, who is now under indictment, of the witnesses who don't really want to be front and center in this whole thing, that they just want to see justice done, of the victim's family that just wants to see justice done. So it's very perplexing and, in my opinion, wrong, the way they're handling this case.
Surprisingly, for a man who's lost nearly a decade of his life, Lydell is upbeat. He speaks with a positive outlook that focuses on the future, not the misdeeds of the past. He's trying to get a job, but his murder conviction is stalling any chances he gets at employment. He wants to travel, but his bond conditions prevent him from leaving the state. He's ready to move on with his life.
It's been challenging. I mean, this whole journey has been a challenge, and I believe that I'm very equipped to take on this challenge. Do I think I should be going through this challenge? No, I believe that this is an act of injustice. It's an act of a miscarriage of justice. I mean, what else is it that we need to get justice served to me as well as the family of the victim?
As his case continues through the courts, Lydell mainly keeps to himself and his close circle of family and friends. After his arrest, he said most of his friends abandoned him, but he calls it a blessing today because he now knows who truly cares about him. He spends his mornings in the quiet writing letters to the people he left behind in prison. He carries a box of envelopes, a stack of photos of him on the outside, and a spiral notebook filled with a page of 50-something names of the people he writes. He says he's not the only one wrongfully convicted. He hopes his letters and his story give hope to those who continue their fight. In a way, too, the letters help keep him grounded, a reminder of how quickly life can be snatched away. When he's finished penning that day's worth of handwritten letters, he drives his red Kia sedan to the post office and stuffs them in a large envelope addressed to the Michaels unit. Afterwards, he'll sometimes go for a drive and take in the sights of the sprawling city. He remains in awe of the massive freeways and towering buildings. While most speed by, Lydell cruises along, thankful to feel the sun on his skin and the freedom to take it all in. While the confession and subsequent arrest of Jermerico Carter is a welcome ending to this wrongful conviction story, I can't help but imagine how difficult it must be for the family and friends of the victim in this case, Aaron Shearhorn. It has now been 10 years since he was killed, and they will have to sit through yet another trial. According to his obituary, Aaron, who was just 28 years old when he passed away, was pursuing a career in the travel industry and had dreams of one day opening his own catering and event promotion company. He cared so much about the community in which he was killed, Montrose, and quote, his ultimate goal was to create a unified musical event bringing all businesses in Montrose together to restore harmony to the community. According to those who knew him, Aaron was deeply compassionate, had a big heart, and his outgoing personality touched the lives of many. Aaron is survived by his partner, his parents, stepsisters, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins who all miss him dearly. Shortly after his death, many of Aaron's loved ones created the Aaron Shearhorn Foundation for Change. After Aaron was denied a safe haven inside Blur Bar on the night he was killed, they decided that one of their missions would be for Montrose bars, clubs, restaurants, and other businesses to enter into a safe haven agreement whereby they will promise not to turn away people in similar situations. And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to know what you think about this case. What are your thoughts on how Lydell Grant was convicted with eyewitness testimony? What do you think about his struggle to be fully exonerated, even now, and how long that process is taking? Let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. Today's episode was researched and written by Matt Kaiser. You can follow him on Twitter at @bymattkaiser. If you'd like to hear these episodes without the ads, or check out some additional Court Junkie bonus episodes, or just learn about how you can support this podcast, go to courtjunkie.com/support, which will redirect you to my Patreon page. That's courtjunkie.com/support. And I have another video going up on my YouTube channel, hopefully this week, where I discuss getting messages and emails from people involved in many of the cases I have covered. You can check that out at youtube.com/courtjunkie. Thanks again for listening. Until next time. If you're a business owner, you don't need me to tell you that running a business is tough, but you might be making it harder on yourself than necessary. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down anymore. It's time to upgrade to NetSuite. Stop paying for multiple systems that don't give you the information you need when you need it. Ditch the spreadsheets and all the old software you've outgrown. Now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place, instantaneously. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time and money with NetSuite. Join the over 22,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/court. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/court. That's netsuite.com/court.